podcast with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
And welcome to the show, everybody. This is season 3, episode 12, episode number 102. And let's just cut to the chase. What's on everybody's mind? Who, show of hands, who is never playing Mario Kart the same way again?
I just really love that you call it Mario Kart.
Mario?
I don't understand what we're talking about at all.
What? You have not been online today, have you?
No, I was telling Shandy before we started recording, I have been in meetings since 1 o'clock this afternoon. I've been talking from 1 o'clock to when I left my therapy appointment at 7:15.
Okay, so full disclosure, I've been sick all day to the point where like I'm in sweatpants right now because I'm freezing and everything hurts.
I feel you.
And I had a really stressful day at work that I also did not go on the internet, except I saw a little messenger, you know, it said, Michael David has sent you an image. So I'm like, a photo? What is this photo? And it's a screen cap that reads, and now you are about to be in the know, Amanda. And I was just like, what? And then I read it, and then I like walked away. And then 2 hours later, I was like, wait, what did I read?
That sounds totally, yeah.
Okay, so this is an excerpt from Stormy Daniels' new book, Amanda.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, yes, you can.
Edge of my seat.
I lay there, she wrote, annoyed that I was getting fucked by a guy with yeti pubes and a dick like the mushroom character in Mario Kart. Mario Kart. What the fuck you people say?
You say it however you say it. That's like my favorite thing. Honestly, it throws me every time. I don't know if I've told this story to you before, either on or off the air. But I'm sorry to change the subject for 1 second. It's just the Mario thing.
Amanda's definitely processing this right now.
Yes. Yes.
I think I'm too tired to find it funny, guys. I'm just like, oh, okay. She's trying to be witty. Good job.
It's not.
Good job. Stick to your day job.
Well, no, the best was the Twitter party that followed.
Now I understand some of the tweets I saw first thing in the morning.
Yes.
Okay,
why Mario Kart is trending on Twitter.
You pronounce it the way that you pronounce it. I love it. But seriously,
back to talking about me.
I have to say this Mario thing because, listeners who are familiar with RHAP, Rob Cisternino's podcast, he has done some collaboration with Mario Lanza, who's like another, you know, this is like super nerdy Survivor stuff. Like if you're in the community, you might know who that is. And I remember having him, oh my God, I can't talk. Rob had Mario on the podcast one time and like referred to him as Mario. I had this moment of like, I thought they knew each other and he's like mispronouncing his name on air. Like, what the fuck? And then came to realize like, no, that's just how you say it is it Long Island? Like, is it New York?
Long Island. I don't know. We're both from Long Island and we both saw Mario, so.
But it's the best thing ever. Once I was really uncomfortable when I thought he was like mispronouncing somebody who is supposed to be someone he knows his name. Then it became really funny. And I love it. And so don't ever correct yourself for saying Mario Kart.
Okay. You know what's really funny is Zachary yesterday, when he was leaving school, his little friend Brinkley, this comes up to him and she goes, Here, Zachary, I made you a picture. And it was a picture of Luigi and Chewbacca. And a rocket ship. Now, it looked nothing like any of them, but the colors were all there. But
that's really adorable.
You could just tell.
Yeah, so it's really funny because I have now two Mario Land characters coming up.
Quite literally. Oh, yeah, God.
So, anyway.
Interesting reference, though. Like,
yeah, well, but I feel like it's one of those, like, false, clever moments where it's like you're thinking about like, oh, like this could like set Twitter afire if
and
I write
it
this way. Exactly. I don't know.
So
I
she like... wins. Don't spoil this.
Yeah,
this
I don't want to give her the win. I really don't. Like this, like I feel like I'm just appealing to like my higher morals here.
No. This is like the time you tried to tell us that the PP tapes didn't exist and we refused to believe you.
I was going to say,
I said that it didn't exist. I think it wasn't proven.
And
it shouldn't be a concern.
I think I just don't like low-hanging fruit. That is what she said.
I think maybe I like low-hanging fruit too much.
I think so, too. That's all right. We even each
God
other.
God damn it. I just want us to be better as a society.
Well, I want
we
us
to be
better.
Better, but we can also laugh at that.
Exactly. I'm still going to laugh. I will always laugh about the pizza.
I mean, there's still children in cages, so don't feel too bad for the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
I have very specific stupid humor. It's like fart jokes. And that's it.
Man. All right, well, one out of two people being amused by that's not bad. I don't consider that a total screw-up of the top of the show. I'm just saying, it was an awesome Twitter party. And I was only online for about 10 minutes total spread out throughout the day today. So, and 5 of those minutes was when I went outside into the sunshine because I was so cold and, like, didn't feel good that I was trying to warm my body up.
Oh,
I don't know. It's all related to like just stress, and honestly, The Handmaid's Tale like really fucked me up, and just whatever. Anyway, neither here nor there. The new J.K. Rowling book came out, and Amazon delivered it to my house today.
Nice.
Oh, the
Robert Galbraith.
Oh, right.
Galbraith. Man, Galbraith, I can't pronounce Galbraith, anything right.
Mario.
The Mario. How do
we want to pronounce it? That's how it's pronounced. Whatever.
That works.
Oh my goodness! I kind of forgot. I'm gonna have to get that book.
It's huge.
Sorry. Yeah, it's big.
It's like this big. Mm-hmm. It's like bigger than it's bigger than Mr. Toad the Mushroom. I'll tell you that.
I mean, you're talking thick. Like it's very thick.
Thick. It is. Girthy. It's a girthy book.
It is.
Yeah.
Jay, can you get me my book that's on that counter upstairs, please? I am not talking about your penis. He said you better be talking about my penis in there.
Very thick.
Yep.
But anyway, so that's coming. but in the meantime, the hurricane, we survived. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what, flooding or anything? Power loss? Everything's good?
So some people in Raleigh did lose power. I think it was like a total of 9,000 maybe, and it was a result of like a tree or something falling. Okay, here you go. Look how freaking thick this book is.
Oh my God, it's like a Harry Potter. It's huge.
It is like a Harry Potter. It is probably Half-Blood Prince size.
Yeah, I was gonna say Goblet of Fire, but...
I don't know if it's goblet big. But
okay. So are you saying that Snape is thick?
Yes. Well, we knew that. It's 648
Did
pages.
We?
Well, now thick we in the know. Sense of like dense, oh. not smart.
Right. Yes.
That's where I mean, it's a great word. It can be used in so many different ways.
Anyway. True. Yeah, I just thought, you know, we were still talking about penises. Come on.
We are. We're always talking about
Amanda always elevating us and me always bringing us right back down.
Hey, girls will be girls.
That's
am I
what
right?
She said.
Hey, you know, that's it's a perfect repartee. That's what rounds us out.
Now we're on a topic that's on Amanda's speed.
You know, like, gotta have the hanging and you've gotta have the yeah. straight and narrow.
She's like, video game character penises, not so much. But literature penises.
I think
were,
it's because I wasn't raised with video games as a kid. I think the reference is just lost on me.
I wasn't either. I only had a Game Boy, that was it.
Yeah.
And I had a Super Nintendo and I played the shit out of some Donkey Kong. And Mario Kart and some weird games too, like Aladdin. And I actually still have a console that plays both Nintendo and Super Nintendo. And I have some games and I have it in my head to like somehow figure out how to plug it in and like play some games.
You should.
I know. I have this whole like idea of like having like a I was going to say contest, but that's maybe not the right
like a
word.
Tournament.
Yes, like a tournament with the you know one of the fun games.
Sweet, you should do. Is it the Nintendo Switch? Is like the new one. That's what Jay has that one, and it has like. Is it the Switch, Jay? It has like all the games, like all the old games from like Zelda through, oh, the NES Classic. So I think it's like retro Nintendo, but like now.
The console looks like what the Super Nintendo console looked like, except it's not marked up the same, and it has holes for both the Super Nintendo and the regular Nintendo games. So you can put either in.
Okay.
Oh,
it's like $60. It's not like even that expensive. Like
the cartridge of the actual game.
Yes. Yeah. Like you need the physical game. It's like old school. It's not like
the thing. Yeah. You know, you just like
you need the physical thing to stick it in.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't play.
Yeah, you do. I mean,
well,
that is
isn't
true.
That just a metaphor for life?
The low hanging fruit and the straight and narrow.
The straight and narrow.
Okay, so hurricane though. So my office closed Thursday and Friday. We worked from home on Thursday, and on Friday we were closed. Daycare was closed early on Thursday, and then everybody was home on Friday. The schools were closed on Thursday and Friday, so they were just really like super prepared for Florence. And it ended up moving so slowly that it got stuck over Wilmington and like that area, that all of the other areas, like, so it shifted. It was supposed to originally last week when we recorded, it was supposed to be a direct hit, like the eye was going to hit Raleigh. And then overnight, Tuesday into Wednesday, it shifted to hit like that Columbia, South Carolina area. It never really, so Columbia ended up getting the same kind of like conditions as we did, which was we just kept getting bands of wind and rain nonstop for several days. But the dangerous conditions were never even really that bad in Raleigh. Like, there was definitely winds. We definitely had like trees that fell. Thankfully, everything in my community was fine. Tim, the awesome realtor, like showed up at our house on Friday. He was like, "I just wanted to see how you guys were doing."
That's oh my
so
god!
Nice.
So sweet.
He is like the best. I'm telling you, if you ever want to buy a house in Raleigh or a condo or whatever, like use
seriously
my realtor. He is the freaking best. And then he was on his way to like the VA or something in like Cary, like another like 20 minutes away from us, to go do some like training course to be like a volunteer for something else. Like,
oh my god, I kind of want to move to Raleigh just so that Tim the realtor can sell me a house.
No, he's the best.
He just sounds like the best human.
He is the best human. And the get this, so I was like, so is your wife super pissed that, you know, you're driving around today instead of being at home? Because you still have like, there's still like big gusts of wind. Like, it came in bands. It wasn't nonstop, but they were still there, you know, where everything would move like, you know, sideways. And he was like, yeah, I told her I was going out to Target. And then she called me an hour later and was like, are you still at Target?
Oh, Tim.
I know.
Oh, Tim.
You know, no wind or storm or hurricane can keep him from the line of duty.
No. So
what's the like mantra of the Postal Service? I feel like that's
neither wind nor rain nor sleet nor snow.
Which, like that.
We
and
got
for Tim.
We got mail. Paul Roberto dropped off our mail on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Holy shit. It was the correct mail.
I think so.
Yeah, he's getting good.
He is getting so good, and he was there nice and early. It was like 10 a.m. instead of that usually like lunchtime.
Yeah, that learning curve. He's got it now.
I know. I feel like it took him a good 6 months to get started, but
zero fires since then.
Knock on wood. But I did have this thought. I was like, it's this poor dude's luck that like a tree is gonna fall in his mail car or something.
Oh my god, stop. Don't even.
Yeah,
but he was there the next day, so it was okay. Like,
yeah.
He was good. But yeah, so it's just a lot of wind and rain. I would say that the worst of it was overnight, because I woke up several times, like with Alex or to pee or whatever, and every time I looked out the window just to make sure everything was okay, and I would see the trees really swaying, and I was like, please don't let us like wake up to a tree on top of us. But all was well. A big thank you to everybody who did say nice things on Facebook and whatnot. I really appreciated it. The thought. We got an email from Ashley. Thank you, though. Thank you so much. She said that she's going to give us an amazing review Sweet. Everybody should go give us an amazing review. She binge listened from the very beginning and is all caught up now.
That's a lot of us.
I know. Now tell you, that is a lot of us. That's what she said. What did you think of the episode where Amanda totally shit on our glee about the pee tapes?
It's probably her least favorite episode.
Now that's one of my favorite ones.
Just the trying to be self-deprecating.
You also just said shit and pee in the same sentence, and that was great.
Did I?
Yeah, Amanda shit all over
our pee tapes.
Yeah. Now, if only Stormy Daniels had you as a ghostwriter, maybe her book would be better.
Oh. Maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, she wanted to know about turtles. She said that she kept thinking that, oh my God, Jay will be devastated if anything happens to the turtles. And okay, so we were all really worried about the turtles, but we were more worried about the Mighty Koi. Like, we thought for sure that, you know, if
punk band, the Mighty Koi.
I know, really should yeah. be. Yeah, if yeah. the dam like the lake overflowed from all the rain, that they might get like washed away. And we haven't seen them, but that's because everything is like super muddy in there still. So it's hard to see anything. I think we've accounted for most of the turtles. But again, it hasn't been sunny, so they haven't been, you know,
out
to really.
Well, what about the fish? Like, could you throw like some fish food on top of the pond and then they'd all kind of like, bloop, bloop, bloop,
maybe,
like, come up
I
to
mean,
the top?
We have duckweed growing on the pond and they come up and they eat that. We're hoping that we see them at some point, but we all survived. If you're listening to this and you are in Wilmington or New Bern or Lumberton or any of the areas further south of us or on the coast, like, I hate to say thoughts and prayers, but like, my heart goes out to you because I know that it is devastating right now over there for those people, because that hurricane was supposed to just move along through and, you know, destroy another city, and it just parked there and dumped rain on them and like that really got the brunt of it. So
yeah, I saw on the news this morning that I guess like Wilmington like really prepared, like they just had like tracks of food and water, and like they were like putting out the message that like, you know, just if you need these things, like if you need food, if you need water, like come here and we've got it to give. So it sounds like they're at least in better shape than maybe some of the other hurricanes, but it is
the problem
scary.
Is it's currently it's so flooded that it's not accessible at all. So everybody there, I think, is like trapped there and they can't get a lot of rescue vehicles in. I think you are right that they were prepared. They just, I think, you know, at some point all that stuff is going to run out and they need to, you know. But anyway, that's depressing. And we have to talk about something else depressing, in which I am so glad to just be freaking done with this for the next year. I'm not going to lie. Because let's talk about Handmaid's Tale. Amanda, do you want to lead the discussion?
Sure. I wish I had wanted to like do a little more preparing and going through my notes, which maybe I should just read some of them, because it's like going back through them, like they got pretty funny, especially towards the end. I got really cheeky with my notes. There's some emojis in here in these notes. But I guess as a whole, I loved this season. I really did. And yes, it was very dark, and a lot of the imagery was like super troubling and super hard to watch. And I don't know what it is with my brain, but it's like I kept seeing the silver lining of like it all just felt like a big ode to the unflappable strength of women. That I feel like the entire season was just time and time again, like, women will survive. Like, whatever you put them through, they will survive, because that it's just in women's DNA to do so. So I will start it there.
You had a way more positive take than I did. Yeah. Sandy, why don't you go?
No, I love that.
I love that too.
I love that outlook, and I think it also, you know, it does sort of explain, because overall I liked it too. like a lot of people, I had a problem with the ending. I understand, like, from a narrative perspective, why they ended it like that, but I wasn't happy with June's decision at the end. And then the other thing that I was kind of like, about was just like June's sort of like Stockholm syndrome a little bit with Serena, where in the end it was like, I don't know. I hate that she said to call the baby Nicole. I hate that she had compassion for Serena because Serena can go fuck herself. But if bringing it back to kind of what you were saying, Amanda, like if you do look at it a little bit more of like really being about like focusing on the women, the strength of women, then it is sort of this like solidarity with women, even when they're fucking terrible. And that's where I don't know. I would have preferred, I guess, like not to try to excuse Serena. And even they did it a little bit with Aunt Lydia.
They definitely did that with Aunt Lydia.
Aunt Lydia is the fucking worst. Like, yeah, stab her with a fucking knife.
They not did that with Aunt Lydia. Violence. I thought the Serena thing.
Only on TV.
I thought the Serena thing was a little bit different. Like, I looked at it a little bit differently. I had compassion that she felt she gave up everything and just wanted a baby.
Yes.
But I didn't think that excused any of her behavior. And I thought that it was interesting that they were possibly setting her character up to maybe lead a resistance next season. Or, like, they're showing somebody who... I thought they were using it as a device to show someone who was slowly waking up. Because you have, you know, the moms, I'm sorry, you have the commander's wives, and then you have the handmaids and the Marthas. And, you know, everybody has a pretty distinct side. And I thought that it was interesting to see that there's definitely trouble brewing in Paradise with some of the commander's wives having minds of their own.
Right, and I agree with that. And I do think that it's really interesting to see her come around. Because, like, of course she's eventually going to realize that her situation is fucking terrible. But the thing is, like, she was at the forefront of making it that way.
Oh, yeah.
She is more than complicit. She was an active agent in doing that. And then even within the system, when she did give everything up, like, she fucking held Offred down. Well, she held her down every month while her husband raped her, but she, you know, held her down.
She
especially
did.
That one time at the end was, like, even, yeah, I don't know which is worse, whatever. They're all terrible. But
she
like
did it out of spite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but I mean... like, that doesn't get excused just because...
No, not at all. No.
Just because the problem is, like, it is interesting to see her come around to be like, oh, fuck, what have I done? But it's I don't know if disappointing is the right word. Maybe just interesting, and I think perhaps, like, true to some human nature, that she only comes around to that when it starts directly affecting her own life. And the fact that she could live in this world and see all her other, you know, female compatriots essentially enslaved and treated terribly, and that's no big deal, or she's, you know, she's fine with it for the quote unquote greater good, but then when it starts to affect her in her own very personal life, with her as a woman and her child, then it's like, okay, we have a problem. And that's like a part of humanity that I just have a problem with in general. So that's where I'm like, you know.
Absolutely. But she does represent a faction of humanity, a large faction of humanity.
Right.
Definitely.
Right. I think that's a good point.
And so I have no problem with that being there. I think it's really interesting. But at the same time, like, there are people, like, I had been told, like, there will come a point where you start feeling sympathy for Serena. And, like, it didn't happen. Because, you know, yeah, it sucks. Everything that happened to her sucks. But she did it to herself. She can go fuck herself. And it's interesting for the show. But, like, no, I didn't have compassion
for
her.
So what if next season, Serena and June secretly team up? And June is not a handmaid for the Waterfords anymore. But they somehow, their paths cross again. Because I can't imagine that story plot wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
What if she ends up, like, going all in on the resistance and, like,
she needs to make reparations. Yeah. And this is what I see even with, like,
do we accept people who have been so complicit, but then realize the error of their ways. Like, what,
right, and that's, and we see, we see that a lot, like even in the current political climate. But it's not enough just to be like, oops, I changed my mind. Like, you have to actively work to help undo the wrongs that you, that you, you know, helped enact.
Right. Now, were you disappointed that you, that Serena didn't wear a dress that said, I really don't care, do you, on the back of it?
I think that would have been a little, almost too on the head.
That's what she said.
Damn. Yeah.
I think you got what they were going for, though. I think, you know, you made that, that connection. But I think the one thing that I will add, because I found the relationship between Serena and June just really actually just the relationships between all the women I found really fascinating and complicated in so many ways. But I think for me, the thing I kept coming back to, and like, I think why their relationship, they kept sort of moving back to each other, was because anytime either of their characters had any success, it was because their actions were being motivated from a place of compassion or tolerance. Mm-hmm. That it's, you know, it's like when they start to work together to work on, you know, like keep Waterford's like paperwork going, and it's like, right, she gives her the pen and like empowers her to like work with her, or when they decide to go to, you know, the men to ask for their children to be able to read. It was out of love for their children. Like, anytime anyone did anything, and when they did something from a intolerant place,
it didn't work out so well.
It didn't work out. You know, it's like that really awful rape scene didn't work out so good for the Waterfords, because then, you know, June was gone. And the only reason she came back was out of compassion for
her baby,
the baby, for the baby, and knowing that she was in trouble and needed to be rescued. Right. Otherwise, like, they would have never seen her again, and it was a direct result of that act.
Yes. And also in the colonies, when they have the wedding between those two women.
Yep.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. So it's like, and you kept kind of seeing that again and again. It was very subtle, but like this like notion of anytime anyone did anything brave or from a place of tolerance, like even in the, you know, in the end when, you know, June gets out, it was because she, you know, she acted out, she did something brave, which caught Rita's attention and set that plan in motion.
Yes. So are we thinking, because I don't think it was confirmed unless I missed it, that the Marthas set the house on fire to get the escape
plan? Goodness, can we talk about the Marthas, and can we talk about Rita specifically?
Yes,
literally, I think my note was, wait, hold on, let me pull it up here.
Rita's
I think I just like scream wrote, Rita, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, the Marthas are the resistance, exclamation point, exclamation point.
You mean, oh, I'm kind of sad that you didn't have Rita, exclamation point, exclamation point, bad peach emoji.
Yeah, I should have. That would have been better. But, and I was thinking about this morning, that like, what a beautiful,
that was awesome
representation of just the overall, how race is treated in Gilead. Yeah. That it's like, you are literally silencing women of color by making them Marthas. Mm-hmm. And they're able to kind of move through this world unseen. And that is ultimately what becomes their biggest asset.
Yes.
Cool.
That literally the system is arming them with the tools they need to bring the system down from the inside. Because the more and more I thought about it, think of how many times throughout season 2, someone said, where is Rita? And the other person said, I don't know. And the conversation ended. And no one thought anything of it. But anytime
Rita
went out running for them.
Right.
Oh my God, I actually didn't even notice that until the last time.
Mm-hmm.
What, with the tea? Like when she
when he was like, yeah, she's never, women are the bane of my existence.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
That's, I just, that was the first time that I was like, okay, she's doing something. But it, wow. No, it's definitely, a rewatch is a rewatch is
I don't
probably
think
in store for getting ready for the season three, because there's just some things already that you guys are saying. And like offline, we were talking a little bit about Amanda had been looking into the music. So that's something else I want to pay attention to. But I think that would be.
All right. The music. They were
well, actually, I want to, if we can, before we leave the race thing, yes. I have one other I would like to talk about, and I want to see how what you guys thought of it. Because, again, this was also in sort of thinking back on it after my whole, like, Rita, Martha's epiphany. The scene with all the commanders during the birthing ceremony,
yes.
where, you know, Fred is handing out cigars and he's shaking everyone's hand and he gets introduced to like the newest commander who is a black man.
Yes, uh-huh. I did notice that.
Yeah. And, you know, he says that like, oh, you know, like that his wife has had like, I think two babies or something. And they're like, oh, so no handmaids for you. And he's like, oh, yeah. Waterford does not shake that man's hand and he does not give him a cigar. And I think at first you can write it off as he's jealous.
But it's really because
wife, but really it's probably because of race, because that is the only person of color in any position of power that we have seen in Gilead ever.
Okay, that's super interesting, because first of all, the handmaid comment was like all the guys were being super creepy, like, you know, creeptoids about it, like, oh, I guess no handmaid for you. And he made a comment like, yeah, well, I mean, isn't that what we should all strive for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is like, yeah, snap. But the race thing, like, I don't think in the book it was addressed directly, or was it? I can't remember.
I don't think it was. I think it was in like a follow-up interview or something with Margaret Atwood.
I believe it was like the afterwards or whatever that was.
Yeah, that just like the... Anyone of color was just like killed out in the initial takeover.
Because maybe I was not paying attention, because there are a lot of people of color in the series. And I guess maybe because in the first season, I don't know, we spent so much time with the Waterfords that I guess I didn't think that like all the commanders had to be white. And it's like, you see like black people as Martha's, but you also see them as handmaids. And so I think part of my brain just like extrapolated that to everyone and didn't necessarily think, cause like you see like Hannah is half black and she's placed in just like a normal quote unquote home.
Right.
So I think, I don't know. I honestly, and this probably sounds really dumb, but like, I don't think I had really noticed that. But now that you're saying it, it's like, oh yeah, whenever all of the wives got together, it was just like a sea of white.
I have the answer.
Great. Let's hear it.
Okay. Well, I did notice that all the commanders, you know, were, and their wives were white. But in the original novel, there is a reference in the actual book, the text, but it's the resettlement of the children of Ham, which... remember? So, and it's just, it's like a passing mention that they pretty much, you know, wipe
them. Which, right, I mean, like, who are we kidding? Like, of course Gilead is racist, because it, like, racism and sexism are, like, you know, really good friends. And, like, also, you know, it's sort of also in line with a lot of more conservative Christian ideals.
Right. That was one of the criticisms of the book, but Margaret Atwood was all for them making Luke and what's her name that got out?
Moira,
thank you. She was all for making it more intersectional, like the novels as a whole. The series as a whole.
Well, and it's like, and I think that that's one of the really wonderful ways, I think, that the show adapts and brings the overall story to like today and what's happening now. And I think they always do such an amazing job of making it feel just close enough to our current reality that it's terrifying. And I think that's why it affects us so much, because, you know, certain like subtleties just make it feel so close, you know, like even like some of the like subtle chants that they're shouting during the protest scenes, and just like these little tiny things that you're just like, you get these flashes of like, oh my God, is that the future we're heading for? Like, shit.
And I think the flashbacks really helped with that too, to like see like how does this happen. I mean, you have in one of the flashbacks, June has to have her husband sign for her to get birth control.
I know.
That's like, one of the we're on, you know, the brink of, you know, potentially Roe v. Wade like being in real danger. And that's the first step to potentially other terrible things. So you really do see like how it could actually happen.
Yeah. I'm glad that we're kind of talking this through, because honestly, like, my overall thoughts on the series was I really enjoyed it as like a work of art, but it has, I must be like very empathetic or an empath or whatever the right word is, because like I absorb every freaking sad thing around me and then it affects my mood and I can't get away from it. Like, I have been so down in the dumps and so like just everything has seemed like foggy and gray since I really started picking up with this watch and, you know, a couple of episodes a night that like I have been like, you know, on the verge of like an emotional breakdown. So I'm kind of glad that we're talking this through.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I don't have to think about this again until next May.
Definitely.
But I am glad though that we're talking this through, because it's actually making me feel a lot better. Well, I wanted to talk about the baby thing, because I like the Hannah stuff, and that's why, like, at the end, my problem with the end is that she gave the baby to Emily, but the whole reason she was there was because the baby was still nursing. So how the fuck is Emily going to feed this kid? And like, I thought of it that way, but my other thought was as a mother, like, if Zach was there, I would not leave and I would die trying to bring him back. If I could get Alex out safely, but Zach was still there and I had just seen him and promised him, like, I absolutely understood that choice and I would have made the exact same one, except for the fact that I don't understand how that fucking kid is going to eat. So,
well, I guess the thought is that, like, you know,
she's going to get someplace and find formula.
Right. When they get up to Canada, like,
but babies eat every 3 hours and Canada is not 3 hours away.
I don't know. Maybe there's a mini fridge in the back of that van.
I hope so. I hope so. But like, so the
maybe there's a breast milk pumping station somewhere along the way.
I don't know. But, you know, it is funny. And I will say this, that with the nursing thing, like, that was because I think that some people might think that was just like a plot device to get her back into like the house. But like, that is so true. Well, there were times, now I'm adjusted, but like in the beginning, my boobs would like just sporadically start leaking like in the middle of the night. And then Alex would wake up like a minute later. And it was just, it like, it's like the female body is incredible, like some of the stuff that it could do. And even now, so I was home with Alex for what, 4 days? Alex doesn't eat like a whole lot when he nurses. So I stopped producing as much, because when I pump more than what he eats, because I donate the afternoon, like, you know, pumping. So my supply kind of, just even after 4 days, just adjusted and went down. And then the last 2 days that I've been back at work and pumping, I think that's why, that's another reason why I haven't felt good all day, is my body is desperately trying to get back up to what it was, even back on like Thursday or Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it is crazy how adaptable that you are, and, like, that biological, like, instinct between, like, you know, mom and crying baby. And, like, I used to always joke that there were times if Alex was napping, like, I couldn't go near him because I was like, he can smell me. He knows.
He probably can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
No, I thought they did a really good job of showing that, because I totally bought in. Like, I never had a cynical moment. And of course, like, I don't know firsthand what that's like, but I didn't need to. Like, I think they did a really good job with that.
Good.
And that was, yeah, that was some pretty intense shit.
Yeah.
All of the kid stuff, which, again, like, coming back to current events, like, all of the kid stuff and the separations were, of course, making me think
that
of
was so brutal.
Of the borders and it was brutal. Just insane. Like the meeting with Hannah when at first she like ran away from her and then was pissed, and you know, it's like, oh yeah, this is exactly what we hear about when the kids are being reunited and like don't recognize their parents anymore. And
that was
just
before this. Oh yeah, crazy.
To get back, sorry. I have a hard time getting words in edgewise. I don't want to interrupt you guys, and you say such interesting things.
I'm waiting, but it's one thing, and then we can move on.
I did find it a bit gimmicky that they kept finding reasons to bring June back into the house.
Yeah.
But I think I ultimately would excuse it, A, because they always found a way to actually really make it work, like, logically, and also because just the story functions better when all the characters live under one roof. Like, just you can develop the tension and you can just build on it more, and just the story feels more, just more heightened that way. So it's like I didn't like it, and I noticed that it kept happening.
Yeah.
But I could excuse it because from a story standpoint, I understood why it's so important to keep her in that house as often as possible.
Which is why I'm wondering in season three, like, what is that going to be? Because she can't go back to the house now. No, not after what's happened now. So what is it going to be? That's where I was like, June, like, is there some sort of underground? Because she's going to have to be in, you know, she can't be out in society.
Right.
Otherwise, she will be dead, and then she can't bring back Hannah. So, like,
And does she lose her good credit with the underground, i.e. the Marthas, because they all risked everything for her.
They're women supporting women. She got that baby out. That's what they cared about.
I know. And I think that's ultimately where, you know, where they'll go with it. But it's like, that's a possibility. Like, I would be pissed if I risked my life and, like, not everybody got out. But in speaking of that, freaking Bradley Whitford. Did anyone else see that coming?
No, but I actually wrote, what's Josh up Lyman. With Bradley Whitford? Okay, first of all, what the fuck?
Right, and literally when that car pulls up, I'm like, if that is freaking Bradley Whitford, I don't know what I'm going to do.
And it was.
And he,
you know what? He was just as awesome playing a weirdo commander as he is in everything else that he does.
Yeah, well, and it's just because that, like, he is such a big, recognizable actor. And I mean, yes, like, every actor in that show, like, just the acting is, like, just top-notch. And I feel like as an actor, you would probably want to be a part of that cast. But it's like, you feel like you have to see that character again, because you wouldn't bring in such a recognizable actor.
Yeah, he's coming back for season three, because I totally looked it up. I was like, I have to know.
Good. I opened up a thing about spoilers for season three, and I haven't gotten a chance to read it. Maybe I will read it after our conversation.
So he's totally in it. But yeah, I was just like, oh my God, Bradley Whitford is awesome in everything, including
this. Really is.
Which is funny, because now I'm Googling Bradley Whitford.
He was Emily's
after
commander.
You guys are saying
he was on the West Wing and a whole bunch of other. He's been in like a gazillion things.
He was the dad in Get Out.
Yes,
I haven't seen that. Which person was he in the
Emily's commander, the one that helped her escape?
Yeah.
Okay, so how do we feel about him?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he's part of the resistance as well. I think there's a faction of Gilead higher uppers who are definitely starting to have some regret.
Well,
yeah.
And that's
he's fascinating. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he's fascinating, but I kind of hate him. Again, it's the same sort of thing. Like, okay, I guess he helped somebody get out, so he is sort of in some way working at least on the, like, individual level, person to person, to help right a little bit of the wrongs. I mean, because, like, look at this woman that he helped save. And this is where I have a hard time applauding. Because of Gilead, this woman lost her wife, lost her husband, was forced into sexual servitude, was repeatedly raped, was her clitoris was removed from her. Then she was sent to a forced labor camp. Then she was brought back to, again, you know, be a... forced into sexual servitude. So he saved her, but, like, yay.
Okay, Shandy has clearly never seen the West Wing. She has no compassion for Josh Lyman.
Right. I'm not so poor. I just think that they have teased this character in a way that I find really, really interesting. Because, on the surface, he seems like a real prick. But yet he's doing these things that seem to rub against how the character is presenting. So I think... they're setting him up to be something really interesting in season three, And just from that standpoint, like I'm really curious to see where they take what they're going to do with this character and like where they're going to go and how he's going to fit into the storyline.
His wife reminds him, like, you know, every hour that he is a horrible person. So don't worry.
And so then how do you get from there to there? Like, how do you get to like the architect of the colonies to like, clearly he knew a lot about Emily when she came into the house, almost like he sought her out.
I think he sought her out. I totally think he sought her out.
I think he did too.
And he's seeking out the ones.
Yeah, like, who is the person I have hurt the most that I can now help? I agree that his character is interesting and I'm fine with seeing where it goes. Like, I agree with you on all those points, but I still just don't like him. And the other reason the other reason I don't like him is because he could just fucking tell her up front without making her spend hours in agony thinking that he's going to rape her. Why not just tell her up front, hey, we don't do that in this house. Like, it's all good. When she kills Aunt Lydia, he could tell her up front.
We don't know kills.
Well, when she's dead. Okay, when she's
I'm pretty sure they're not going to kill Aunt Lydia.
I feel like she's done.
I don't.
Because what happens to her if she's not dead and he leaves her alive in his house or like helps her or whatever, and then they start looking into, I don't know. Anyway, but okay, when Gilmore Girl stabs Aunt Lydia, again, like, he could tell her, okay, like, you know what, I probably shouldn't even do this, but I'm gonna help you out and this is what we're gonna do. Instead of letting her stew in her room for hours, you know, like going through, you saw all the emotions she went through. Like, she had a total breakdown, and then he takes her in his car, and like, again, just fucking tell her. That's where I thought it was like, okay, you're doing good things, but like, fuck, think about the person that you're dealing with and try to maybe make things a little bit less frightening for them. And
I just thought it was storytelling.
And just to spitball, because again, I've lived a life of privilege. I've never needed to be evacuated from a country.
Yeah.
But part of me wonders if, like, keeping her in the dark as to his plans was intentional to protect her or to protect the path. You know, like, lure them out of people that know what's happening.
I get that, but I also kind of think that it's a little bit of just kind of like a power trip.
Maybe.
Which, coming from the person who is like the economic architect of Gilead, wouldn't surprise me. Again, like, he can regret it, but he's still living the posh life, you know? Like, he needs to do a little bit more before he's atoned for his sins, if you will.
We also don't know how much he's done. All right. Real quick, let's talk about our favorite moments. Do we want to talk about Eden?
I think we should.
Oh my god.
Let's talk about Eden. Let's talk about our favorite moments, and then let's get into some feedback because we're starting to run a little long.
Okay.
So Eden, let's talk about Eden. My god.
Oh my god.
I don't think I would have done what she did. Like, I think that I would have just. I don't want to die.
What an amazing character she turned out to be, though. Like, when she's first introduced, she just seems like a plot point, like just like a foil, like just furniture. And by the end of her arc, like,
Oh, I cried.
Well, I will say, when she first came on the scene, that was one of the times where I texted Frank and was like, oh my god, these child brides. Like, that was intense in and of itself. And I was actually almost suspicious of her in the beginning. Yeah, like, I thought she was going to be the fall of Nick. And she was kind of the fall of Nick in a very different way.
Yeah. I did too.
I liked the arc that she didn't end up being, like, you know, some, like, fembot Bible spy, but, like, I cried I was like, oh, this is horrible. And then when her parents turned her in, like, fuck them.
Oh.
I think she's just this tragic character because out of all of them, she was the only one willing to die for her convictions.
Yes, she was. I would not be.
You know, that she became a victim of the very thing that she put all of her faith in, which was in
love,
God and love and living this pious life. And as far as she was concerned, she did everything right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anyone in power in Gilead would actually be willing to die for their convictions in the way that she did. And I think there's something really I mean, obviously tragic, but like very poetic about that. That like you, she goes out and you have so much more respect for her character than I think many, yeah, many of the other people we have met over the course of the series.
Definitely. Which also, even just like the way that she went out, it was just like so like reminiscent of like the Salem witch trials, and like all of that was sort of implied. But I also, I don't think that it's a coincidence that she was only 15, because I do think that at that age, you know, like your first sort of feelings, you know, so intense. And so of course it, like, it almost makes more sense that like, of course you wouldn't deny that, because,
oh my God, she was like a Gilead Tumblr or live journaler.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, and the after episode, for that particular episode, I can't remember exactly. I believe it was like either the head writer or the executive producer, whatever, like sort of said something to the effect of like, you know, when it comes between like anything else and like the attraction of two teenagers, like the attraction of the two teenagers is going to win.
Yeah. You know? I mean, yeah, we've all
like you feel everything so intensely.
Yeah. We all lived through the twilight years. We know.
Yeah.
Who was her sparkly vampire?
Yeah. So, favorite moments?
Oh, yeah. Okay, favorite moments. I had two favorite moments. The first one just completely gutted and destroyed me, but it was Janine singing to baby Charlotte at the end when she's, you know, revived her, and then, like, the credits play, and you just hear her singing throughout it, and it was just, I was gutted. I was like, oh, my God, I want to wake my child up and hold and sing to him. I was, you know, I thought it was just such a beautiful moment. And I definitely toned Janine down. Like, she didn't have as much as the crazy this time around.
Yeah. It was almost like crazy optimism, which kind of goes back to what you were saying, Amanda, about like,
yeah, anytime. She kind of was our narrative for that.
Right. Well, and I think that's the perfect example of the point I was trying to make, that literally they tried everything else to save that baby. And the thing that saved her life was skin to skin contact and love from her mother.
Yep.
That was the one thing that child needed to survive. And even at that, like, you know, Serena Joy was actually motivated by making sure that baby survived, like coming from a place of caring and concern. And that was a favorite for me too. I loved that scene.
Oh, and the number one neonatologist in the world was also a woman of color.
Yeah. Yep. Yes. Loved that.
And that, I mean, just
she put the stethoscope on and had this moment of like, yeah, it was very powerful.
Yeah,
it was very powerful. And that, to see that transformation from, just like you were saying, Amanda, like a woman who is silenced and forced to be basically a servant, to then remember that, like, wow, this is a woman who's had years of schooling and is a top person in her field. And like, and also, infuriating to see them just like, put on this hat for the next, you know, couple of hours, and then go back to being a servant. I know, but like,
disgusting.
Wow.
My other favorite moment was, and I think that we're all going to share this one as well, was them singing. I love the Canada episode where the Waterfords go to
that whole episode. Yeah, me too. I was going to say that whole episode.
That was my favorite
next
episode.
Next year's Emmy.
Yeah, and the moment where they're all singing the America the Beautiful I cried a little bit about that too.
Well, and it's funny, and I was sort of telling you guys in our chat, like I started that episode like late at night and went back to it the next morning, so I actually watched that scene twice just to make sure, and like my sleepiness, I didn't miss anything, and both times it choked me up. I like almost like a weird like knee-jerk reaction. I was like, what? Why am I leaking? Why am I so sad? Like, it was very moving. And I think just start to finish, the like, the nonchalant, or just the obvious bluntness of "we believe the women."
Yeah. Oh, I love that. God. That was the best line of the whole series, is "we believe the women."
Love you, comedians.
I love just the delivery of that line, that like the act, you know, the actor didn't like make a big deal out of it, and it made the line so much stronger for it.
It did, because that's the only thing that, because we didn't text at all or discuss this whatsoever before we're recording this, but the only thing that was shared was A, the national anthem that Amanda told us, and B, I was like, holy fuck, the Canada episode, we believe the women.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah, and Moira's line about, you know, it's like she has her sign that, like, my name is Ruby, Moira, and she's like, not Ruby, what, you asshole, or whatever.
Yes, not Ruby, you asshole.
I just,
my name is that yeah. like, as a recurring, like, protest motif, that also, I think, was just like, so reminiscent of it, like, other things going on in our country a lot of times with, like, for example, like, unarmed Black people being shot by the police, and, you know, there's always like, say their name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was super powerful. I loved everything about the Canada episode. I thought that was so powerful. I really, really loved a couple of things about the letters. So just the letters in general, how they were like, oh, I was hoping that it would be something that would, you know, make Gilead go kaboom. And then they're like, well, this could go kaboom. Like, I love that idea of the nonviolent protest that can have a really big impact. Mm-hmm. And again, of course, it worked because they believed the women. Yep. So that, you know, like, there are two parts to that. But I also really, really loved the interaction between Nick and Luke.
That was a great scene.
I am super over this, like, love triangle in the sense of, like, I don't know, just like two dudes being super jealous, or two women being super jealous, whatever. The tried and true, like, jealousy triangle motif, I think that is so boring and also, like, fairly juvenile. And I just, like, I loved seeing like how two men can both love this woman and not want to kill each other over it. Granted, Luke doesn't know that, you know.
But still, I don't have a feeling that Luke would.
But, like, Nick never felt like...
Yeah, Nick is never awesome. Felt,
Nick is... I fucking love the shit out of Nick. But he never felt, you know, like... Or he never at least showed, you know, like, disrespect towards Luke or anything like that. And he just continued loving June. And then also, I really loved how it showed that June can also... You know, especially in these sort of circumstances, like... You can love two people at the same time.
Yep.
And
and,
like, you can feel both of those feelings intensely at the same time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't negate either one. And I really thought that was a much more interesting way to show the complexity of people in relationships.
Right. By just not spelling it out, just sort of letting it live and breathe. Mm-hmm. And also in that episode, I mean, I think really that whole episode, I think, is probably just, like, a high point of the season. But the whole conversation in the bar with Serena and the guy from...
Hawaii.
Yeah, from Hawaii.
Super American.
Like, he's been in a bunch of stuff. Like, he was in, like, Parenthood, and he was in a few other things. And I can't think of the actor's name, but...
Oh, he was in Parenthood. That's right.
He was in Parenthood. But...
Okay.
This was the first mention I had heard that America still exists in some capacity. Did I miss something? Was there something in the book that references that, like, part of America stays intact? I felt like I just completely missed something.
It sounds to me like the continental U.S. is all Gilead, because they talk about Nick and
Alaska.
Alaska and Hawaii.
Yeah, are the only two that are. Is it Alaska as well? Is still America?
They mention Alaska, so it's like the contiguous U.S.
Okay.
That's what it would seem like, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I know Nick and Offred said, or June said something about going, I'd love to go west or something, and she... And
they're like, California, Gilead. Oh, but it's still...
Yeah.
Still Gilead.
Oh, California, come on.
It's not treason if you vote to break away from Gilead.
Well, oh, I loved that when she was like, well, if you had done your research better, you would know that I would never turn my back on my country. And he was like, haven't you already? Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
America's beautiful, like, goddammit. I've never felt so patriotic.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the only other thing I wanted to highlight Well, two things, but just this one. So in episode 11, when Holly.
When I can't believe we haven't talked about Holly. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. First of all, like, it was just a beautiful episode. And I think, like, just give Elizabeth Moss every award there was ever made, because she is just a beast of an actress. Like, yeah. That whole episode is her. And she is just a force. But that's not what I actually wanted, the point I actually wanted to make. It's very, very tiny, this point. That's so when she... Yes, that's what she said, literally. So when she is in the car and she turns on, she starts the car
the
and
radio.
The radio.
Oprah!
Comes on. Yes!
That was Oprah's voice.
I'm like, is that? Oh! I'm like, it's
really?
Oprah!
Yeah!
Oh my God, I missed that. I did not even pick up on that.
She's uncredited as like a radio broadcaster person.
Yeah, it's literally one of the few notes that I wrote down for that episode. I'm like, is that Oprah?
Yeah, totally.
Damn.
Yeah, no, that was crazy. Like, power to her for doing that by herself. Yeah, it was just beautiful. I cried at the end of that one, too. Pretty much from, like, the Canada one on, I just cried nonstop.
Yeah, just really.
Yeah.
Well, and I think for me, there was just, like, a really interesting arc to the episode. Because I feel like the first, up until the explosion in episode 6, I feel like the story wasn't really moving forward, but they were more like each episode was an exploration of a different theme.
Yeah.
You know, and I sort of wrote down, you know, one was like sort of the relationship between mothers and daughters. Like one was the relationship between, you know, the aggression between women. And what were some of the other ones?
One of them was Alexis Bledel's flashback.
Yeah, like women on women brutality. Yeah. I put for episode 2.
Is that when she killed the wife?
Yeah,
which I was like, yes, queen.
Yeah, well, and it's like episode 4 sort of felt like it was like the guilt. It was sort of a theme around guilt, and then it's like the terrorist attack happens, and then it's all of a sudden like we wake up. And, like, there's a completely shift to the back end of the season in terms of how the story moves and everything, like, picks up.
Yeah, it does.
I would imagine, you know, much as it does after a big terrorist attack, like, we're all kind of woken into, sprung into action and activated. So I thought that was a really interesting how the season kind of paced off of that moment.
Yeah, which is, that was the point where... in the chat, so we didn't talk about it, but we did send some cryptic messages, and I had sent a message like, yeah, when I got to the end of episode 6, I had to watch another episode, even though I had planned on going to bed, and that's why, because it was the terrorist attack. Like, how can you, but I thought that was interesting, too, the choice of the character who did the attack. Is there, do we have any information on that? Was I not paying close enough attention? Like, I know who she was, but she was just concerned with keeping her comfortable, you know, in quotes, situation when we saw her last season.
Well, she was the one that had her tongue cut out. She was the replacement.
Right.
Emily of Glenn.
Of Glenn, yeah.
So I just figured she was bitter for having her tongue cut out. And
that's fair. And she was silenced, and then she made herself.
And it was a really good way to get like Janine and Emily back from the colonies.
Yep.
Yes, I was very glad they came back, but it was pretty fucking jarring.
Yeah.
I loved that wife had to go there then, though, like at the beginning, and that it seemed like Alexis Bledel was being nice to her, and then it turned out that she was not. That was just so great. And like, even just like,
hey, Marissa Tomei, we had a we didn't even talk about Marissa Tomei. That happened so early in the season, I forgot all about her.
Oh my God, I forgot all about that.
Oh no, when she was like, I think it did a good job of highlighting that, like, yeah, these wives and certain other people are complicit in a very big way. And you can, as a wife, you can think whatever you want to think, but like, you are holding someone down while your husband rapes them. Like, that's the world you live in. So yeah, you made your bed.
Yeah.
Yep.
And now you have to, you know, eat poison in it.
Yeah.
With them consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into some feedback here. All of the Handmaid's Tale feedback. Dennis said, certainly a big winner at the Emmys. I was trying to look. I can only find Samira Wiley winning.
Yeah. Let me hold on. I have, and I don't think they actually won as much as I think they should have. Game of Thrones took outstanding drama. Claire Foy took lead actress.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which, I mean, she was great, but like, our girl Elizabeth Moss, like, she killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, so they, Handmaid's Tale didn't win any of the major acting awards.
No, I think it just won for best guest actress for Samira.
For Samira Wiley. Yeah, I think you're right.
Which, to be fair, she's so fucking amazing.
She's amazing.
Oh, she's so good.
Yeah.
So, so good.
All right, next up we have Brent. I love the show. I only have one complaint about season two. I feel like they spent the entire season building up towards June escaping, and the ending just felt like a tease. I understand not wanting to leave Hannah, but she already resigned. She was already resigned to that decision when she was pulled off the plane earlier. So she essentially changed her mind, but left the new baby with Emily with no guarantee they would escape. I realize the show probably won't work if June got out, unless they did a lost season four with the Gilead Six. Screaming from Canada, we have to go back. But I just didn't feel her decision was consistent with her actions on the season. Curious to know what you guys think and if she made the right choice. Regardless of how it ended, it is the most important show on TV, in my opinion, and everyone should be watching.
Yeah, I think it was kind of guaranteed that Emily and Holly Nicole were going to make it out. You know, and I think that's why June felt as though she could stay. Like, she was sending one daughter to safety, and she had one more to get. Like, she had one more promise to fulfill.
Yeah. I said this earlier, but I would have probably made the same choice, I think. My only concern is how that baby is going to eat.
So. Spoken like the true mother of our modest panel here.
We have email from Matt, and then we have a voicemail or two from Maggie. Matt says, "Hey, Brots, I watched season two of The Handmaid's Tale as Hulu released it, so I apologize in advance if I misremember or forget anything. I enjoyed this season a lot. It mostly avoided the sophomore slump. Yet now I'm thinking a lot about the things that bothered me about the season. I guess I'll get them out of the way and finish with the stuff that I liked, which there was plenty of. My biggest issue with the second season was the plotting. Since we're off book at this point and they decided not to use Atwood's epilogue, there have been some struggles to figure out what happens next while not eliminating most of the cast in the process. So we wind up with subplots the writers basically gave up on, like the colonies and Canada outside of the episode where the Waterfords visited." I disagree with that. I think that we're going to see more about Canada.
Yeah.
Maybe not the colonies, but I feel like we're going to see a lot more of Canada.
I will also say the epilogue could take place like much later. So it's, you know, it's,
yeah, it does.
It's still there. It
takes place like well after the fall of Gilead.
Yeah,
I think these seasons are getting us to like
to the epilogue.
How it falls. To the epilogue, yeah. Which I think is so, as a writer, like so fun to figure to connect those dots.
Yeah. Some of the pacing felt off too. While I'm a big fan of Bradley Whitford and will watch him in just about anything, his character shows up far too late in the season for the ultimate reveal to have any impact.
Well, I will say, if you don't know who Bradley Whitford is going into it, then it doesn't feel like that.
Fair.
Probably the biggest issue with this season's storyline comes from one of its most memorable moments, the one I assume Shani and Amanda danced around on the last episode, the handmade suicide bombing. It's a big shocking moment, and I remember seeing it and really looking forward to where they were going with it. Turns out, not too far. Nick's mentor / recruiter was killed, but outside of what should have been a turning point in the season was just a cheap cliffhanger. It barely registers when considering what happens in the second half, I guess, of the season. Wow, go back and listen a few minutes ago.
Totally, I hope this. Our conversation enlightens that, changes your opinion, maybe.
Like, if it wasn't for that, quite literally, Serena would still have 10 fingers.
Yeah.
True.
Just saying.
Yeah, I would argue it does. It motivates everything afterward.
Yeah, it does. Waterford has a limp and walks with a cane for like an episode, and then everything goes on like nothing happened. But again, I think you guys are right. Like, June and Serena never would have done the writing thing, which got Serena back into that, like, hey, I miss being a person with actual freedom, which then, you know, leads to the end of it. I think we've reached a limit as far as keeping June in Gilead. I can understand why they did so. The colony subplot never went anywhere, and bringing her to Canada takes her out of the action and away from most of the cast. So we wind up with her failed escape in the first half and her decision to stay behind while Emily takes her baby to safety. I get that they were getting at an interesting quandary where we'd wonder what we'd do, but having June stay behind makes little sense. She has no money, resources, or housing, and it's raining too. And who knows how much access she can get to help, not to mention her recent birth, which was under pretty horrifying circumstances.
I don't know. That baby, that girl birthed a baby herself. I'm pretty sure she can do anything at this point.
Very mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a superhuman, if I ever met one. I will say, I like, because of Colleen's take, I'm sort of coming around on that more.
Yeah.
I was right there with you, Matt, on that, but I'm kind of...
I think that's just the simple parent decision. Like, you would not leave.
Yeah.
Especially given the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, given the fact that she had just seen her.
Yeah. She had seen her and she promised her, like, she'll see her again. So, despite these critiques, I like the season a lot, just not as much as last year, which was my favorite show of 2017. So I'll get to the positives. The show is still exquisitely made.
Oh, yes.
Yes, truth.
The filmmakers know how to create memorable, horrifying images, as well as images that are oddly beautiful.
Yes.
The show has always made Gilead feel painfully real, like a manifestation of our worst fears. Todd Vanderwerf called it The Walking Dead for progressives. Of course, the timeliness added to the show's potency. The episode featuring June and Hannah's brief reunion was released around the time of the separation of migrant families received peak coverage. The performances are top notch. Moss, Liddell, Dowd, all still excellent. But season two's MVP. No contest is Yvonne Strahovski as Serena Joy. The arc is nothing new. We've seen villains recover their point of view and maybe seek redemption, but Strahovski brings some new and interesting things to the table. She's still a believer, which is in constant conflict with her rising doubts. There was a hint of this last season, but it comes in full effect this season with her trip to Canada. Her experiences as a Gilead mother combined with the tragic story of Eden and finding out that she isn't safe from the oppression that she's helped bring to power. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Serena got her privilege.
Sucks to be you.
There's some other memorable moments from this season, like June's memorial to the murdered Boston Globe reporters.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't even talk about that.
The handmaids telling each other what their real names were. But this has gone on. I know, that was great. Long enough.
That was a really good moment, too.
The handmaids really, like, banded together. I think they were very weary of each other last season, but, you know, there's definitely more of a camaraderie, a sisterhood going on now.
Which, to my point, anytime the women did anything motivated from a place of tolerance and love, the ball got moved forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Despite my critiques, I still enjoy this season a lot. I hope season 3 changes things up because I can see myself losing interest if it continues to be the bad guys kick everyone else in the teeth repeatedly. I'd like to see a little more hope in season 3. I get that.
Yeah.
I totally get that. I mean, I had sort of heard, you know, certain things going into the season, and like I had heard that there was a point where people just like threw in the towel. Now, like thinking back on it, I think that the rape scene of June was probably the point that people were talking about.
Yeah.
And I get that, but I also...
Hey, Serena even called it out as rape, which, you know...
Yeah, that was...
Serena lose her cool, I think, was a sight to behold.
Yeah.
Yes, to be an actual sort of fly on the wall. Yeah, with the conversation between them. That was great. But there were, you know, because I agree, like, there were a lot of, we got kicked in the teeth a lot, like, throughout the season. That's why it was difficult to watch. But there were some moments of redemption and, like, sweet, sweet justice. And I think that they sort of put enough in throughout the season to like make us able to keep watching. And I just hope that in season 3, like, there's a bit of a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for anyone who's read the book and read the epilogue, we all know how it ends. So,
right. It's coming.
Yeah. It's coming. We just don't know when or how many seasons from now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do Maggie's voicemails and then start to wrap this up. All right. We have two voicemails from Maggie. I think that I'm just going to play them back to back.
Yeah. It's a back to backer.
Colleen, this is Maggie. I'm calling in with lots of Handmaid's Tale season 2 feedback. I'm not in my car, and I am 100% less drunk than last time I called about Handmaid's Tale. I made two notes. Okay, and I've watched this, like, I finished this in July, like, when you, I thought you guys were going to want, like, be talking about it. I'm giving you a little bit of a hard time. So, yes, so this season was crazy. I can't believe how many times June, like, escaped and did, you know, and came back and all that crazy stuff. And it was really hard to watch when she came back after, and that family that helped her, the father was killed and found out the mother had to become a handmaid, and she was super depressed. I totally got while she was depressed, but I was like, this is really hard to watch with you being this depressed, June. Like, I'm like, come on, June, snap out of it. And she kind of did. But yeah, that was kind of hard to watch. So some of my notes, like, Serena being shot at, and I believe that's kind of why she couldn't have kids, but still kind of hate her and would totally be in the audience booing her. Not shooting her, just booing her. The thing that was kind of amazing, was the Canada trip when Waterford and Serena went to Canada. Oh my gosh, like, Nick giving the letters to Luke, that was amazing. Not totally telling him, you know, hey, I slept with your wife, but just sort of saying, you know, I know your wife, she's okay. And like Luke and Maura and Waterford, that was just so good too. I was like, oh, I was so nervous that whole episode, the whole Canada trip episode. I'm like, okay, this is, I don't know what I want to happen, but I was so nervous for it. And Serena and the guy in the bar, I almost wanted her to run away with it, like to leave. But of course she wouldn't because she's Serena. So let's see. There was something that, because one of my friends said, but I totally thought when one of the Marthas was killed in the street, I totally thought that was Rita. I thought that was the Waterford.
I thought that was
Martha.
Rita too.
Like, June, why are you not why are you not more upset about this? Like, it's Rita that's dead, and then it wasn't. I was like, okay, I was really worried about that. The bomb was kind of crazy. When they brought Emily and Janine back, and Janine and the baby. Oh, that was just heartbreaking. And kind of amazing that she ended up being okay. And I sort of started, like, I think kind of Serena and Aunt Lydia kind of became more developed characters this year.
Hold, please.
Hi, Brad. This is Maggie again. Okay. Gotta talk quick so I don't have to leave a third one. Okay, so Aunt Lydia and Serena totally were more developed and more seemed like real people, and you, at least I, like, almost started to feel sorry for them and like them a little bit. Almost. Like, in the last episode when Emily kills her, I was sort of like, Emily, stab Aunt Lydia! And then she did, and I was like, yes! And I'm like, oh, I kind of like that. That character was growing on me, and I wanted to see what happened to her. So that was crazy. And Emily's, like, commander dying was freaking scary. That was really awful.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know why I'm laughing at that, but I am all of a sudden. But then it brought, I'm watching, like, the whole second season, and I'm waiting for Bradley Whitford from the West Wing to show up, because I had listened to a podcast, the West Wing Weekly, and they said he was going to be on there. And so that was a very interesting character. I really liked him. Okay, that was a text message. And so I really liked him. He was very weird. I wish we had spent a little more time with him. That house was totally different.
Oh,
totally crazy. And then... I forgot about that other house where she got to see Hannah. That's what I forgot to put in my notes. See, I was going to say, how many times did she get to escape? But that was really hard when June got to see Hannah. That's it. But, yeah. Oh, why did she go to Canada then? She she was just taking Hannah and ran to Canada. Easy for me to say. And then, how many times is June going to get to escape? I really just can't even. How many times? Like, she's escaped 3 times this season. It's just insane. But I am totally on board for this show. It still can be hard to watch, but it's so good, and I'm sort of like, yeah, I really can't wait to see what happens next. I really am really hoping to read the book before the next season. Probably said that last year, but now I really mean it. And yeah, it's just a good show. It's hard to watch sometimes. I'm kind of on a, like, anything that's not Handmaid's Tale right now. Like, I went for Westworld and Handmaid's Tale were really kind of hard and depressing, so I'm like, only watch happy things right now. Yes. Only happy things, because that's what I need right now. So, can't wait to hear what you ladies thought. Sorry for rambling so long. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye!
Bye. I think Maggie kind of pretty much summed up in 7 minutes, or 6 minutes, whatever it was, in 6 minutes, what we just spent an hour and a half talking about.
No, she had some good points. Well, she hit a few things that we didn't discuss.
She did.
Yeah.
I'm glad she brought them up.
Yeah. I totally forgot about the dude dying during sex.
I know, me too.
I love that she got to kick him in the crotch.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I'm saying, like, these little moments of justice. Like,
yep. Yeah.
Ah. Little, like, tipping the scales a little bit back over. But I will say, like, in terms of, like, this being an important show, but also a hard show to watch, I will say, like, one thing about that, I kind of had a similar experience, Colleen, where, like, it really affected me. But at the same time, after I was done, it was like, well, what do I watch next? So I sort of, like, marathoned a couple of seasons of New Girl as, like, a palate cleanser. Yes. Because, you know. But as I was watching New Girl, which I've seen before, I was like, oh, this is kind of sexist, and, you know, like, the, ugh. And it was kind of this moment where I was like, okay, it's, like, similar to how I feel about How I Met Your Mother. Like,
Parks
okay,
and Rec. Like, do a Parks and Rec rewatch.
Well, yeah. That's fraught now, too. But
why?
Because of a season Zari, it's just like, ugh, do I really want that?
Oh, right.
See, what this is why we can't have nice things. But, like, anyway, so it was like, you know, I like the characters. I like a lot of the jokes. Like, you know, there's still a lot that I like about it. But also at the same time, like, there's a lot of sexism in it. And it was kind of like, why can't I watch anything that's, like, smart and woke and with it? That I don't know. I, like, wanted to go back to The Handmaid's Tale for that a little bit.
I would recommend for a palate cleanser, Glow, actually.
I started it but didn't finish, so maybe I'll have to keep
what's
on.
What's Community?
Community?
Yeah, Allison
Brie. Okay. I never finished Community. I like, dropped off, like, a couple seasons before the end, I think.
You know, I watched the end recently when Jay was doing a rewatch. I think I talked about it here. And it really wasn't as bad as I thought, like, you know, it would be. But anyway.
Or Great British Baking Show.
Yes.
Another really, really great palate cleanser.
Yeah, so we are on, we've finished with that season. Now we move back to the Mary Berry season, so.
Oh, good.
The one that we have, the controversial one we just watched.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that.
We're in
season.
The middle of it. And Zach's, like, all into the show, too. He's like, I want to watch the making. He keeps calling it, I want to watch the making show. And you're like, the baking show.
That's cute.
But I asked him today, how's school? And he was like, school was incredible.
Is that, like, something they say a lot on the show?
No.
He was just excited about school.
He's just excited. Anyway.
That's really great.
Yeah.
It's okay.
All right.
It is incredible.
Let's put a pin in it there. I'm sure that there'll be feedback for this episode, and we can pick up in a smaller discussion in future episodes for us. If you would like to contribute some feedback, we would love to hear from you and what you thought. Thebroadcasters3@gmail.com, or you can call us at 331-276-2373. That is 331-BROADS3. Is it BROADS3? Yes, BROADS3.
Yes.
So, yeah, we'd love to hear what you guys had to say. Thanks for getting through the season with us, even though you guys all watched it back in, like, July, because we were originally going to do this, like, 2 months ago.
Summers are hard, guys. We had a lot going on.
Yeah, we did.
But we came through eventually. That's what's important, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we did.
Hope it was worth the wait.
Yeah.
Well, and I hope that, like, it allowed a couple of extra people who didn't watch it like as it was airing to catch up, and now they can listen too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
If you want to be like Ashley, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That would be very much appreciated. And tell your friends about us. Because you know what? There's a lot of us to listen to and love. We have to think of a title for this episode because I didn't write anything down while we were recording. And nothing stands out off the top of my head. So hopefully we can think of something super fun.
Yeah. Cool.
Next week, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming. And we'll have all the fun, and hopefully Shandy and I will feel better.
Yeah, lots of liquids and
herbal
tea.
Yeah, rest.
Yes. Yeah. When you're sick, rest is best. Rest is best. Quote,
I will say I haven't actually done yoga since Saturday, but on Saturday I did like 3 different videos. And again, I love your girl, Adrienne, because I specifically just looked up like yoga for sickness, yoga for headache, yoga for, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, you should do that.
I'm so glad you're enjoying her. Three days in a row now that I've done a yoga video, and it's like,
nice.
It's feeling good.
All right. On that note, anybody else have anything?
Just Amazon and thanking our dear patrons.
Oh my god, I forgot. Sorry guys. If you want to shop through the Amazon affiliates link, you can do so at jandjack.com/Amazon. If you'd like to pick up a patron, you can go to patreon.com/jandjack. Help us all out. And look at the different levels. And listen to, if you're at the $5 or more level, listen to Shandy's rant on the Patron's Choice show because it is great.
I still need to go back and check it out. I'm excited.
I have another thing to add to that rant. So
okay. I have some things
an
too.
Addendum.
An addendum, if we can do it, if people are interested.
Yeah, if there's another one, I'll go on it because I had a moment this past weekend in which I was in line for Walmart to buy one thing, and I was in the express item line, and there was a family in front of me that had like 28 things, and I counted. And I was
wrong line. They are in like the wrong line.
That is not 10 or fewer.
I was so pissed, but I had this.
They don't come in pairs. You don't count a pair as one.
No. So, I mean, and because they had, so part of it, and I gave this to them, was there were chips like behind us, and I guess it was like 10 for 10. It was like the little mini bags. So I was like, all right, well, I'll count these 10 bags of chips as one fucking item because, you know, they just added it here. But they still went over. So anyway, rant. Anyway, on patrons, please do that. Oh, get your mugs, get your broadcast mugs. JaneJack.com/store. Mine finally came. Haha, that's what she said. So do that. Do the feedback. Let us know all the good stuff. All right, guys, have a great weekend. By the time you hear this, my name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Oh, and I think maybe we'll call this show Fuck You, Serena Joy.
I like it.
Aw.
No, not really, because I'm not going to use the fuck word in the title. But.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, we could also do Fuck You, Gilead, but that doesn't solve that problem.
We'll figure it out.
Yay, Canada! Oh!
Yay, Canada!
Yay, Canada! I love that as a title. Also, I should have said this earlier. I don't know if this is too late and we'll get cut, but I really fucking loved that they included the Margaret Atwood quote of men are afraid of women laughing, that women will laugh at them.
Yep.
And women are afraid that men will laugh at them.
I was like, I know this. Why do I know this?
Someone once said.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
That was an awesome
for clarifying.
That was an awesome Easter egg.
That was in my notes and I didn't know where it came from. So, thank you.
Yay.
Yeah.
All right, we can do this again. I'm Colleen.
I'm still Amanda.
And I am Shandy.
No, wait. Oh, we did this wrong. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
No, still. You have to say my name is Shandy. No.
I never say my name is Shandy.
Okay. Yes, but this is a special episode.
My name is Broads. There we go. Episode title. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye.